Do you want to become a better songwriter? Well, we created a very simple 10-minute songwriter personality test, and it's going to help you better understand who you are as a writer, and it's going to help you in the writer's room when you're writing with other writers, because you're going to be able to identify what kind of writer they are. Maybe even have them take the songwriter personality test. If you're curious and you want to take the songwriter personality test today, just visit songwriterpersonalitytest.com or go to the link on the writingworship.co website.
Welcome to the Writing Worship Podcast, a place for kingdom-minded songwriters to grow in their craft and community.
Welcome to the Writing Worship Podcast. Woo-hoo. I am one of your hosts, Nick Morrow, but I also have with me
Eric Nordoff
and Emily Weeks.
Yeah.
Having a good time over here today. What's that? Is this our something?
We're just getting Emily hype.
Is the queen of hype, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, she just knows how to bring light and sunshine and enthusiasm.
You tell us, Emily, how much would it cost to hire you just to walk around and hype people? Like on their birthday or hours
you know what?
Hire out.
I already do that for free. So,
okay. DM Emily for hype.
She has one of the best laughs, too. That's one of the things I love about Emily. Emily has a great laugh. Who else has a
Well, your Amanda wife, Chrissy. Kinner,
my wife.
Chrissy. If you get us laughing.
Yeah. There's a bunch of people I have good.
Amanda Kinner, you're right.
Distinctive laughs. Yeah.
If they're laughing and they're in the room, you know it. You know,
totally.
You know who it is.
Yeah. And it makes me happy. It always makes me happy to see Emily, honestly.
Oh, what? Thank you. Wow. This is like affirmation time.
This is great. Yeah.
Keep it going.
You're in the, what do they call it? The seat, the hot seat or whatever today.
Yes.
What do they call that? Seat. Yeah.
The hot seat?
No, you know what I'm saying? Like when they do small groups or calls, Zoom calls.
This
is the hot seat.
It's called the hot seat.
Yeah. And then you just dump out all kinds of gushy stuff on people. Yeah.
Yep. You're on the receiving end of it.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
But we have a good episode today.
Great episode.
Yep.
Here's why. Because one of the least fun things as a songwriter, is if you're a creative type, is administration. Mm-hmm. We all hate it. And I'd say probably we get more questions about this topic maybe than anything in songwriting, which is when I have a song and I finished it and maybe we're singing at church or we're recording it or whatever, what do I do with all the publishing stuff? And there's this almost like this mysterious Wizard of Oz thing with publishing sometimes, or a whole bunch of things related to admin, but particularly with publishing. And so we've had on Matt Lopez from Bethel Music. We had him into our writing club, which is a group that we have. You can actually, if you're interested in it, you can look at the link in the show notes. We had Matt from Bethel come in specifically to talk about publishing because we were fielding so many questions in the writing club from it. You guys have interesting stories, both of you, because you used to work in publishing, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
And Emily, you're a writer who I would guess doesn't like doing admin, publishing stuff.
Well, it's funny because I became the person at church that once I learned even the tiniest bit of information, dangerously small amount of information, everyone was like, you know something. Can you please help us? And so I'm the one that I'm like, okay, well, have you created a little thing, a little BMI or ASCAP or whatever it is? And so now I'm the one with dangerously small information that holds forth to my team at church.
You should get 5% on everyone who you get signed up on BMI or CCLI.
Yeah, CCLI. Oh, that one's tough, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's a process, that one.
Yeah, CCLI is interesting. And I'm sure Matt gets into that a little bit, but because CCLI is the organization that you probably, if your song is being sung in churches across the world, you will get, or at least the US, you'll get something from CCLI. You'll get a statement or a report, or if your song is, well, anyway, if your song is being sung in churches, CCLI comes into play.
They're collecting, all the churches are paying CCLI licenses. They're collecting all of that, paying out the songwriters and all this.
And it's not for songs that are, I mean, yes, the songs are sung, but it's because those songs are projected the screen.
Right. Interesting. Yeah.
Fun fact, you can sing a song at church with no lyrics. like a special music.
Mm-hmm.
Special music, anybody?
Yes.
You can sing it, right? But if you project any of the lyrics, or I think even write them down, you know, have like a little pamphlet.
In the, what do they used to call the bulletin?
The bulletin.
The brochures the bulletin. That they would hand
That's
you
That's another thing, because now you have copied. It's a copyright thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a special license.
I have this same thing though, Emily. I think you and I share an Enneagram type. So we were very close in personality that when I did my due diligence, actually shout out to our publishing course.
Yes, exactly. Same here.
Yeah. Song administration course with Holly
Salazar. That's where I learned.
Yes.
Yep. That's where I learned what I needed to know to at least get mine settled. Yeah.
Yeah. And learned so much in terms of like the PROs and CCLI. And when that happens, you are ultimately the portal for all of your friends.
That's right.
And I hate it. I hate admin. I hate doing admin. So I'm like, listen, you have to call up Lori over at CCLI just like I did.
You have Lori?
Lori Brown.
Do you have Lori?
Yes. She's the queen.
Lori, you're the best.
We love Lori.
Shout out to Lori.
Lori doesn't.
Send this to her, this episode.
Actually, she is. Yeah, Lori's
She's
the best.
Amazing. Like,
she's so kind.
Three or four people over the last year or two get on CCLI, and I'm like, do you know, have you met Lori yet? Yeah, actually, I think she helps a lot of the new folks. Anyway, it's the thing about publishing, though, is that I think what people don't understand, because I'll talk to songwriters and even artists a lot, they don't understand what's happening with their publishing. I'm like, that's if you're making money on songs, that's where it's happening.
Yeah.
And so it's like you have to tend to it's part of stewardship that, you know, I think. And so tending to it, as much as we hate it, it's really important. So it's our most popular course that we have.
Yes.
We'll put that link in the show notes. But it's really, honestly, I tell our writing club all the time, it's like a college level course that you can take. It's pretty dense, but once you purchase it, you can watch as many times as you like.
Yeah.
At that point.
I think there's going to be a group inside of Writing Club who are going to go through that course together.
Yep.
That's the beauty of it. It's like you can just grab a bunch of people. Hey, I'm going to go through the song admin course. Yeah. Who wants to go through it with me? And then they can have an ongoing conversation about it inside of Writing Club. That's another benefit of it.
Another shameless plug for Writing Club.
Another shameless plug, I know.
Yeah, all of our courses, all of our online courses are actually available to our Writing Club. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that comes with that. You can learn more at the link, but all the courses are there. So that's been one of the cool things is we've integrated that this year. There's a knowledge base that we have with the online courses. When people are asking all these questions, they get so sick of me saying in Writing Club, hey, we have a publishing course for that very reason. I can answer some of these questions, but so that's also the reason, segue, that we brought Matt Lopez in. He's kind of a pub whiz, publishing whiz.
Yes, he is.
And works with Bethel Music. And so shared with us a little bit about the publishing world, what that looks like, and just the releasing music, worship music as a church.
Yeah, and there's nobody that understands worship music better, I think, than a publisher like a Bethel Music.
Yeah.
There are very few that understand it. More, they can kind of see the wider landscape because their songs are being sung by so many other churches around the world. It's great to hear from a person like Matt. So if he doesn't know the answer or what he says and shares, if he shares that you can kind of understand that that's probably a best practice for how things need to be done.
Well, speaking of publishing and people who've worked in publishing, you did for many years.
Yes.
And I'm curious, like what was your biggest light bulb as you went from someone who loved music, knew you wanted to be involved in music, and then you started working in publishing? Were there any like big revelations or light bulbs that changed for you in the way that you think about songs and kind of getting songs out there?
Well, I kind of approach music from a business standpoint. One of the things that I feel like God's gifted me in is an ability to be comfortable with understanding that there are assets that you own, and you as a songwriter, you are creating an asset. And I'm fascinated by the process of monetizing. Or really the way I like to look at it is stewarding that asset that you've just created. You've just created something that is an income producing asset for you. And I'm a big believer, if you've read Rich Dad, Poor Dad or anything else, and I believe biblically we are called to steward what God has given us. Look at the parable of the talents and other things. So I think there are some wonderful biblical principles and business principles that come. And so I guess the big revelation I had was, wow, like I wanted Chrissy to create more assets, you know, I wanted you to create more assets. And then I found it to be really important that I learned how to steward those assets that she was creating better. And she did as well. And so I've always wanted to encourage us to, because we see this as something long-term that will be, as she has been blessed enough to write with, she writes for a living, you know, and makes a living as a songwriter, that we want to steward every one of those really well. Side note, one more thing. You know, I think about the, who is Keith Getty, who wrote, who co-wrote In Christ Alone. Mm-hmm. We all know that song. I remember that there was a time when after they wrote that song, he wrote that song, he basically said, you know what, we're experiencing a lot of momentum from churches with this song, and we're going to spend the rest of our next 2 years just fully going all in on In Christ Alone, marketing, stewardship of that song. And he spent a lot of time like creating alternate versions of that song, re-recording it in different formats and live versions, et cetera, and just began to continue to resource, created resources. And that's how that whole Sing conference really emerged. Wow. It was from In Christ Alone and the efforts that they put behind that, that there was kids' versions of that. And then, you know, they just Spanish, other language, and they just really went all in on that song.
Yes.
And I just found that to be so inspiring. And Keith Getty would be a really great person to have on the podcast at some time, because
side note,
I think they're, you know, Keith and Kristen Getty are interesting, very interesting to listen to.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's so good. It touches on something we were talking about earlier, which we can't chase this all day long because we really could go for hours on this. I think that when there's the stewardship principle, right? And we've heard about it with money a lot, that taught in church. And then I think as creative people, we think about creating or stewarding our creative gifts a lot. And then I think sometimes we get the song recorded and we get to that point, and then the stewardship conversation just completely goes away and drops off. Mm-hmm. But really, if you look at the Gettys, I didn't know that about that song, but you look at any label and the way that they've stewarded a song, the real work starts after it's recorded and released.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, you start getting all these versions and resources and getting it into churches and things. And I think that's one of the calls I'm so passionate about with creatives, is how do we use the tools that are available to us, publishing just being one of them, but tied to a lot of these pieces.
Yeah. So anyway, anything you want to say, Emily, about this topic? I know it's been...
No. Yeah. No, I think I would just say that the course was great. Like, very helpful. Very helpful. I think it just also kind of, even if money isn't your motivation, because let's be honest, there's not a whole lot of money in this kind of thing. But even if it's just, for me, it matters to me that when I've created a work of art, that I can, I don't know how to explain this, but that it's my work of art and that I have this like a feeling of completion. Like, I painted that.
Yes.
And so I think just even having your publishing ducks in a row allows you to have that feeling like, now I can release this art piece into the world and it'll come back to me eventually. Like, it was my art piece. It was my unique way of expressing a truth or communicating something to the world. And it's not just out there in a vague way. It actually does come back to your fingerprint in a way. And I think publishing for me is just a way of like just kind of putting my little fingerprint on something officially.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So
someone explained to me like, well, why should I really register the songs or copyright or whatever? They said, do you lock your doors at night? And I was like, yeah. And they said, well, this is your creative doors. This is your intellectual property you own. Like, you're saying, it's your piece of art. It's not. And I didn't know this. I learned recently, CCLI dollars that are unclaimed by the songwriter, but someone's done a song and it's just that percentage of that song isn't claimed. It sits in a fund for 3 years and then goes to the Portland Land Trust. After 3 years.
Does it really?
Oh, yes. I didn't know that.
I learned it from Queen Lori.
Lori Brown
told
me that.
You that?
Yes. Yep.
Oh my goodness.
And because, you know, so it's like, I have a friend who's like has a song and the song is done okay enough where they would definitely have, you know, a few a few hundred bucks or something in there. I said, go claim the money. Don't just let it go to the Portland Land Trust. Although I'm sure they're amazing people.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's like that legally is yours. It's your piece of art.
Yeah, the art piece factor. Yeah.
It's almost like an integrity thing even
for
me.
That's right.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh man, well, so much stuff we could talk about. But let's dive into the conversation with Matt.
Yep. So here he is, Matt Lopez from Bethel Music.
Matt Lopez from Bethel Music. Hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
It's good to have you here. Matt, we are going to just throw you straight into a lightning round questions. And okay. I want you not to think too hard about these, but just to answer from the gut.
Okay.
People always think too hard, especially when it comes to music questions. First of all, on a scale of 1 to 10, if 1 was the worst day of your life, 10 was the best day of your life, how are you doing today?
Ooh, 7. You said okay. 10 was good? 10 was good.
10 is the best day of your life, yeah. So
7.
Solid set. Okay, great. That's wonderful. We'll see if we can bump it up to like an 8 by the end of this.
I'll take it.
Okay, who's your, Matt, who's your favorite new artist at the moment? It definitely doesn't need to be anyone from Bethel or in the Christian world. It could be any kind of musical artist.
New artist, new to me. I'll say new to me, Nick Drake. He's a singer-songwriter from the UK who passed away when he was really young. This is back in the 70s. And I've just recently rediscovered him, and I can't get enough. Definitely new to me, not new to the world. Sorry.
I just listened to Pink Moon like literally 2 nights ago.
Yes.
It's just such a fantastic album.
Yes, it is.
If anyone's on or whoever's listening and you like acoustic stuff, Nick Drake is where it's at. Kind of sad too.
It's very sad. Contextually sad as well.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah, he passed away and may have been self-inflicted. Not sure. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. We're going to start this. Yeah.
It's such an uplifting way to start us off here. All right. If you could listen, Matt, to one song for the rest of your life, and the songs were, it's Christmas time when we're recording this, so I'm going to go with Santa Baby, Eartha Kitt, Santa Baby, the Portuguese version of All Star by Smash Mouth, or any song by the band Guar. What song would you be pinned with for the rest of your life?
Because I already did it for a couple of years when I was probably 12, probably Portuguese All Star by Smash Mouth, because Portuguese is beautiful. And All Star, I mean, it's like a lifetime song, you know?
It's not going away anyway.
Yeah, you can't get rid of it. Yep.
That's true. Okay. Well, this tells us a lot about you, Matt. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Matt, you work in publishing with Bethel Music. Let me hop back here. First of all, tell us about yourself, where you live, family, all that sort of thing, and then we'll hop into
publishing. Yeah. My name's Matt. I am married for over 7 years now, and we have 2 small children. My wife's name is Grace. And we just actually recently moved to Nashville, Tennessee, about 3 months ago from Northern California, a place called Redding, which is up, 4 hours north of San Francisco. And we just moved to Nashville, Tennessee, you know, to follow all the dreams and visions that, you know, in our life. And we, you know, a long, long time ago, I dreamed of coming here as a musician. Back when I was in bands and touring and doing studio work, and my friends at the time, they all made it out here. And then the dream changed for me. I went into business. I was always passionate about business, you know, administration, the church, music, people. I kind of found the intersection of that at Bethel Music. I think God put me there. I had different aspirations. And, he opens some doors and closes some others. And then before I knew it, I was at Bethel Music doing something that I found that I really loved and that I was really good at. Hopefully I'm really good at it. And then before I knew it, I had kids and a wife, and then God put it back on our hearts to go to Nashville, except this time on the business side of things. And we're super blessed. Have 3 cats. I would have a dog if I could, but we have 3 cats, so I'll leave it at that.
The cats won't allow it.
Yeah, they would not.
Okay, well, so I have an interesting question, a sub question on this, in terms of like you did the musician thing, and you kind of said there was some change of plans, or it felt a little different. how did that feel? Was that a wrestling for you? Like to go from I'm in the studio or I'm making music to I'm actually working on music from the
Yeah. I will say there are more people behind the music than there are, you know, in front. There's more people making it and sort of hidden behind the scenes. So I think when you come to like an honest grip of it, it's okay. You know, statistically speaking, you're more likely to be, you know, if you're in music to be not credited, you know, and for me, I still do it every day. The difference is I don't get paid to do it, you know, to play piano or to, you know, whatever it is, play guitar. And so for me, it's actually freed me up, because doing that for so many years, you know, when you're getting paid to do it, your joy of creating the music can sort of, slip away. And so now I'm playing music fully by choice. You know, it's not because I'm preparing for something, for a session or for a gig. It's like now I just sit down at the piano because I really actually love it and want to sit down and play and create. And so that's been a blessing. I'd say that's like a silver lining. Of course, you know, go to shows, went to a show this weekend and I was like, I didn't start a band. whether or not that will actually come true, who knows? But it's still in there, you know, and that's okay. I think everybody should have that inside of them.
Yeah. It's an interesting point that you make though about being able to create something and you're not on the clock in the sense that you're not trying to write for radio, you're not trying to even write for the church or whatever. There's not this like really specific thing you're from. Is a nice side of not having to do it for money or do it like eat what you kill, you know, in terms of making money from music. So Matt, you work in publishing with Bethel.
Yeah.
We know that publishing is more than just entering a few numbers on CCLI and ASCAP or BMI. But give us the scope for those maybe who aren't so familiar with like the world of publishing. Give us like the quick or, you know, the 2 or 3 minute version of like, what do you guys do as a publishing team? And what does that look like from, you know, inception to song release and all that?
Yeah, so I will say in my world, I do publishing and sound recording management as well. So collectively together, you could say rights management, you know, is a term. But I say those two things. So there's two copyrights in music that are at play, sound recording side. And when I say sound recording, I mean master sound recording. I'm thinking label, artists, producers, musicians, etc. Like the actual recording of the work. And there can be many of them. And then we also steward a type of copyright called the composition or the song, you know, but it's the composition. It's the underlying melody, lyrics. And that is, when I think of that, you know, I'm thinking of a publisher. Publisher just named for a rights owner or manager just for a publishing work or a composition. And I'm thinking of songwriters, etc. Singular composition, many sound recordings, you know, and then there's always a composition embedded under the sound recording. For Bethel Music, we're a label and a publisher all in one package together. And so when we're stewarding our rights, and you could call it publishing for all of it, but when we're stewarding it, we're stewarding 2 copyright catalogs and we're trying to send out all the data into the world so that all of the usages that occur, radio, performance, you know, in church, on a stage, in your AirPods, whatever it is, we send out the data that represents our 2 copyright catalogs. We try and do that as accurately as we can. We audit that data. We match that data together. We link it. It's really important to link the sound recording data with the composition data. I'll explain that in a second. And so we send all that data out and then we get revenue back in return. And part of that process is, of course, negotiating agreements for the uses of those works, both individually speaking and also on a blanket scale for our whole catalog, and creating direct relationships and good partnerships with all these different people that are using our work. There's a lot of middlemen that have their hands in the pot that are hopefully giving a great service, you know, for in exchange for what they take between us as a rights owner and our writers and our artists and the consumer, like the person that's actually experiencing or exploiting the work, you know, in whatever type of use. So we're in the data business. And if I'm stewarding my songs well for our writers or for our artists, it means I'm stewarding data really well. If I'm doing that, then hopefully I'm doing a really good job. So yeah, maybe that made sense.
it does make sense, but it's a quick flyby. So I probably have some questions. One of them is this, always intriguing to folks. I'm still learning, exploring a lot of this world that you, you've got the one, like the songwriter's royalty, the composition, copyright and publishing side of things. But then when you're talking about masters, you sometimes have, I don't know, 5-10 versions of a song or whatever. There's there's a lot more ways to make money on that song than just Spotify streams or YouTube or whatever. Talk about that a little bit, because I know I've heard Joel and others speak from Bethel about this and how you guys steward some of that and actually make really great use of some of your recordings way, way, way beyond, like even as consumers, how we might hear it.
Yeah, excuse me. That's a great question. I think from what I've read over the last couple of years, or just from stats over the last couple of years, they're in most mainstream genre or mainstream market for music, like 85 to 90% or above of the revenue is coming from digital streaming. So publishing and sound recording, but digital streaming, meaning the performance and the mechanical uses, you don't have to care about the licensing exact terminology, but just to know the royalty that's coming from when your songs are listened to on DSPs. So anything from like a non-interactive use like Pandora, where it's just playing, it's more like digital radio, to Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Prime Music, where people are selecting the songs individually. So most genres, that's like 85 to 90% of the revenue from their music is coming from that, just from people listening on their devices. And so that's a huge chunk for us in our sort of, you could say, subgenre. You know, from there's Christian music and then down to most of our catalogs are going to exist in the worship realm. Our revenue is much more skewed than that. It's not, you know, it's not as nearly as dependent on this, on the digital streaming. Not to say people aren't listening to our stuff. They definitely are in that way. But there's many other ways to interact with a copyright, like you were saying. And for us being in that worship subgenre, we see a lot of it in church. Or in the reproduction of our songs with, you know, UGC, user-generated content, which is really just covering or using a work, but entering into the digital domain, you know, and we slap that term UGC on it because somebody created a work. It's up to us to go actively claim it. And if it's you know, accurately ours to go claim. And so we see a lot more of our revenue come from these types of uses. And I think, primarily, that's because we're in a genre where people are covering the songs. And that's a very like wide generic term, but for they're playing them in church, you know, and that drives a lot of different types of uses of the copyright, you know, different exploitations, as you could say. So, and we got to steward those. So we interact with maybe, you know, 20, 30, 40 blanket licensors in order to sort of capture and resource the church using our songs, whereas a typical publisher or rights owner is just utilizing maybe 4, 5, 6, 7 primary ones in order to just get all that digital streaming done well. So,
isn't that incredible? Like, that's a lot. And the world, yes. I feel like in the last, I don't know, 20 or 30 years, I'm just learning about it here in the last few, but the world of even like publishing in church music or Christian music has exploded. And it's gone bonkers a little bit. So it's like, I imagine, are you guys constantly feeling like you're just learning new things all the time, or there's new things being created, especially as technology shifts and social media?
Yeah. Every day. I think if we ever got to the point where we thought we knew enough or didn't need to learn anymore, we'd be, you know, dead in the water. We have a motto on our team. Motto is a strong word if my team was listening to this, because I haven't like necessarily put it on the wall. But it's sort of like identify the elephant and then like kill it as soon as possible. And to be somewhat non-PC, baby elephants, you know, before they've gotten large, we kill the baby elephants in the room. Sorry, I just think that's so funny. But we do that because I think a lot of people in our industry, it's challenging work. So it can sometimes be easier to ignore as the industry is evolving, as technology is evolving. Publishing often, because of the legislation around it, and it's bound or held by copyright law in a lot of ways, it gets left behind from as the industry moves along, as the music industry does. And so it's easy to get caught in that, you know, in the past. And so for us, and I, to be completely honest, I'm relatively really new to this. You know, my contemporaries have done this for a really long time, and I'm very grateful. I get to go to a lot of people that have done this way longer than me and ask very humbling questions, you know, and they're very kind to help. And so that's another thing about this industry that's very cooperative while being competitive. And I've heard other people coin it as co-op-etition, you know, so you're working together, but yet you're competing with one another. And so you have to be willing to learn new things. If you're a video game person, there's Fog of War, you know, where you haven't been yet. You don't know what you don't know. And so we're always trying to go into those areas, figure out what we don't know, and then put a bullseye on it. And like, we're going to become experts at that. Who can we ask? How can we humble ourselves, you know, and say, hey, we should have known this, but we're just learning about it now. What do we need to know? So, yeah.
That's so good. I would love to ask about this, what you were talking about, the co-opetition thing. So as a writer, I write in Nashville a lot, and this comes up a lot, right? Writing for radio, writing for the church even. How do you guys, I've heard a lot. I love some of the things I heard Joel. I was at the worship school a few years back and heard Joel speak. And you guys have had a healthy balance or relationship with, like, you have business and you have music and then you have Jesus, and all those things are sort of swimming together in what you do. And I would assume causing tension at times, or inner tension anyway, and you guys who work in the field, talk about that. And how do you guys kind of keep that balance and a healthy perspective on, you know, doing those three things together?
I will say, maybe I'll answer it in this way. I think that, you know, we're in business with like several things, you know, like being Bethel Music, we're very closely linked. We're part of the, you know, the umbrella organization of our church, Bethel Church in Redding, California, which is absolutely amazing. So we're tied to that. And we are also tied to our clients, you know, our songwriters, our artists, what have you. And so with them, you know, we're making some sort of an agreement and a guarantee of, we're going to offer these services to you and they're going to contribute something back. You know, there's an exchange of services, an exchange of value, and hopefully it's agreeable and of great value for both parties, you know? And so we're in these partnerships with our clients, our artists, writers. Hopefully they're getting so much out of, you know, our hope is, and my hope is, that we're being very generous with our agreements, you know, and in those relationships, they're getting great value back. And as well, we're in, you know, lots of relationships with people that are taking our songs further than we could, you know. CCLI is a great example. I'll break it down like very quickly. You know, CCLI is not licensing the performance of a song in a church, though that could be a thing if, you know, if certain parameters are met. But mainly speaking, they're licensing the usage of the print, like the lyrics or the chords, you know, as they're displayed, as they're printed, as they're utilized in a digital format. That's the core of the CCLI license, the main CCLI license. And so in doing that, you know, we don't have the capacity as a rights owner for every time someone wants to sing, let's say, Raise a Hallelujah in church. When they go to sing that song, nor do the Helfers, you know, that wrote that, and some of their team from their North Carolina community. They didn't have the capacity to license that song to thousands of churches to sing, nor do we as stewards of it, you know, as publishing stewards, but rather we enlist another team, another company to then, you know, we make agreement with them, and this is CCLI, to go and then license that song at an agreeable rate to thousands of churches to sing that song or whatever it is, you know, we work with different partners and it's all an extension of us. And I would hope that all of those agreements that we're coming into, where it's the intersection of, like you're saying, Jesus, ministry, business, and the music, and let's say the contributors, like the people that made the music that I'm working on behalf of, I hope that it could be generous for all those parties, you know, and that there's more than enough resource for everyone. You know, going back to that co-opetition thing, I think if there's, if it was fear-based, like there's not enough, you know, there's other people that do what we do, but much, much better, you know, much, much better, relatively speaking. But I think they're much, much better. I look up to them a lot. But if I was scared in our space or in our industry of saying, not enough revenue, there's not enough great writers, there's not enough great songs, and yeah, it wouldn't, you wouldn't be able to partner with them and cooperate. You'd just be competing only. And that would be a really sad place to be, I think, in the Christian music industry. Yeah.
Amen. That's great. So good. I'm sure we could do, I feel like, a whole seminar or conference on that, yeah. Sort of like faith and music and business. But I'm really curious. This is just kind of a fun question. You guys as a pub team, first of all, I think I'm curious, maybe others would be, what is your guys's, I know different, depending on the size of the publisher, the actual team is different, you know, varies in size, yeah. From capital all the way down to the smaller labels. What does the pub team look like? And then I have a little fun question.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's always surprisingly small is the answer. When you go look at different companies, ours is really small. I've withheld so many jokes this morning, by the way. My jokes per minute are really low, but that's okay. It's the morning. I know we're limited on time.
Hey, lay it on us, Matt. I mean, don't hold back on our behalf.
I'm hiding a part of myself, but that's okay. Our team is really small. And we're, you know, in this rights management sort of space, from like birth of the copyrights, sending out that data initially, distribution to maybe 7-8 at our company. Maybe that's 8-9-10 if you slice it another way. But it's really important. It's really important work. Yes, it's like Bethel Music, publishing, distribution, you know, royalties, licensing. Yeah.
Yeah. How many?
You said pub. There is creative publishing, and you know, I define sort of the difference between publishing administration or rights management and creative publishing. Creative publishing to me falls within more of the artist A&R of the label side, but for writers, you know, so it's like, hey, we're going to coach you as a songwriter. We're going to help you improve. We're going to put you in songwriting rooms. We're going to tell you where to be. And we're maybe going to put money behind that and pay your way to go to a songwriting trip. We are going to align you with writers that you work really well with. You're going to turn in songs. We're going to give you feedback on the songs. When the songs are great, we're going to pitch them and try and find homes for those songs. And so that's creative publishing. That's a whole bunch of stuff that my team and I are not necessarily directly responsible for. That's another team. I didn't include that in that number, you know, whereas we're working on, once again, serving the songs with administration and collection. You're going to say.
Got it. No, that's so great. And the difference between the two, because I think a lot of times people just think, oh, I'll get a publishing deal and they'll do this, this, and this. But there's really so many different pieces to that.
Yeah.
And most of those pieces as a writer, like I don't want to do and can't do myself, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's really like different tasks, and it's pretty significantly different if you look at that creative pub versus, you know.
Yeah. I think it's super important to understand that. Not just understand an agreement that you would potentially go into, you know, if, you know, say part of the audience is like a songwriter who's hoping to have a publishing deal. But understanding what is your need, like what can you, like you're just saying, Nick, there's things that you either don't want to do or you can't do, or maybe you could do it, but it would take so much time. It's not efficient for you. And perhaps it's taking your focus away from something that you should be focusing on. And so when you look for that exchange, it's like, well, what do you have to exchange? Maybe it's a part of your revenue stream. Maybe it's part of the ownership of your copyright. You know, it's some of the potential that would come from the song. So you're going to trade away some of that potential to hopefully yield more for yourself that you couldn't have done on your own. And then, so I think the base concept of it is pretty understandable. It's like when you give anything to somebody else to manage, you know, you pay for any service, like any commerce is basically, you know, defined by that same principle. However, with publishing, I think, you know, as it gets more complicated, people, they stop short of understanding what are the exact services that they're enlisting and how much are those services worth? Like, what's the industry standard, if you could say there was one, for how much I should be trading away for what I'm getting? And so that's why I try and break it down you know, especially within publishing agreements of, well, what's administration? What's maybe that worth? What's creative publishing? And what are those services like? And what's that exchange possibly worth? And of course, it all depends on your stature or your history as a songwriter or publisher as well. So,
yeah, that's so good. And I wonder, we may get into that a little later with Q&A, but I also wonder, like, if folks that are listening, I think it's that's a really, really important point. I do think that, I don't know, maybe it's our age or the era that we grew up in, as all of us on this call and everyone listening, I'll get a record deal or I'll get a pub deal, and then that's going to make everything happen, is really not how it works, right? And so even to the point of, like, your point a second ago, a friend recently coached me, another songwriter here in town, a kind of veteran guy, and I just drilled him with a bunch of questions. I said, hey, I'm looking at this potential contract, it's, you know, whatever. And he said, to the creative pub point, he said, okay, how much is that worth to you to give away? Because right now you're doing it all yourself. How much is it worth to give away? And then are you going to have very specific conversations with and a deal with that person that they're going to actually get you what you're trading for, right? Because this is where I think the rub happens, both in record contracts and in publishing contracts, where people sign away a lot of their pub, a lot of their songwriting royalties, and then they're really unhappy. They're like, oh, it didn't change my life overnight. And which is really, maybe it's not how it happens, at least with 990.
Yeah, people. So then, you know, the rights or the ownership, the revenue stream, however you want to define it, it belongs to the writer or the, you know, that original creator of the thing, writer, it's an artist, musician, what have you, until they assign it to someone else, you know? So until you assign it, like through an agreement, it's yours. So it's like, hold on to it as long as you can. And don't just give it away willy nilly. It's, you know, it's like make a strategic choice, you know, to partner with someone to go execute perhaps a service, once again, that you can't do yourself, but you need someone to do it for you. So
that's so good. And Writing Club, who's here on with us, we can ask more about that later if we have questions. I would ask a couple more things. You guys obviously have had just an incredible history over the last 10 years and a lot of success, impact in the church with Bethel Music. You guys, at this point, I know because I've been to some of the Bethel things and heard a lot of teaching and stuff that were your teaching on sort of fundamentals of worship songs, but I'm sure that you guys have, there's almost even formula, I know it can be a dirty word for us songwriters, but there is certain trademarks or tenets of a song that does well in the church. And I wonder if you guys have sort of identified those. I'm sure you talk about them a lot as a team.
Yeah, I think so. You know, just to say, some of our creed or like our, you know, what we go back to as far as songs. I think songs are everything. I've been able to share about this topic previously. And in some times it's been in the context of like churches that like want to release music, you know? And I think that's representative of any creative process. You know, it's easy to start from the finished product side, you know, like it's going to look like this, you know, we're going to record it on this night. It's going to be, you know, beautiful, like all these things. But then it's like, whoa, 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 you're starting like at the wrong end. You should go back. It's okay to have that dream or that vision, but go back to the very beginning and like what's at the core of it and it's songs, you know, it's the melody and lyrics. The composition can sound or get fleshed out like many different things. You could, you know, stylistically take a song in many directions, many genre. I don't know if that's one of those plural words where you don't put an S on the end, many genre. I have no idea. But you take the song and then you create the project out of it. You know, a song will make its way. A great song will be heard, you know. And I think that a lot of people start with the sound recording. Like they think, I'm going to record a thing. I have musicians and whatnot. And it's like, I think if you're starting there, then it's like cover songs. There's many great songs out there that have already been written that are tried and true. There's proof in the pudding. I don't know another phrase to say, but there's those songs are proven. So it's like cover those songs. Those are great songs. You don't have to guess what will be a hit. And then you're still skinning it, you know, and then you're releasing it and doing all the creative, beautiful things. That's a lot of uses in general. But I think that sometimes people end up with work where the song isn't great because they didn't start with the song. So I say all that, you're asking about Bethel Music. One of the things that I've heard talked about from our leadership many times is that one of our goals is to write the songs that the church will sing in X number of years, in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, for lifetimes, or write the songs that the church, you know, that we would want the church to sing, you know, like culturally or value wise or theologically, what we would hope to, you know, make an imprint on the church or on the earth. And also more spiritually speaking, or said more spiritual, because that was very spiritual. You know, what do we want to declare or prophesy into the universe when we sing? Because I believe that, you know, when you say something, it's powerful. You know, you're created by a God who created the world with his voice, you know, by declaring things. And there's some measure of that, you know, in you, as you're in the image of God. And so what are you declaring? So songs can be extremely powerful in that way. And you're saying, you know, for Bethel Music, on the more practical side, like, is there a formula? I don't think so. You know, I think that I will say this, every songwriter has somewhat of a unique voice. If they've like sort of sought it out, I will not claim to be on the creative publishing side, but I have my opinions. You know? I'm an amateur digital marketer. I think that songwriters have a voice, and they have a uniqueness to them. If you try and just blend it all together and find, it'll just become generic, you know, and a generic song doesn't go very far. You have to take risks, both lyrically or melodically. And so I say that because even within our world as Bethel Music, there are many phenomenal songwriters. And when you think about them, they each kind of have a voice. They have a style. And sometimes there's a beautiful like culmination or like an additive thing that happens, you know, when they come together. And sometimes just separately when they write a song, it's beautiful and it's like that. So, there's no cheat sheet like at Bethel Church or in the Bethel Music offices of like, hey, we need that. Always say this word or always use this, you know, chord progression or this term, you know, after the chorus. It's nothing like that. But
yeah. Not stealing Brian's journals or anything.
Yeah. 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 They're locked up. It's like a national treasure or something. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. I have a really silly question. It's not silly. I'm intrigued actually, because I didn't realize until just now when you bent down, your hat says goodness of God. I assume it's a Bethel hat.
Yes.
Yeah. I've always wondered this, maybe others do too, but merch, do writers get anything from the words printed on a merch, like t-shirt or whatever?
Yeah, we've been making lots of goodness of God paraphernalia, but we've mostly been selling it internet. I'm just kidding. There are some merch, like kick over those tables. I don't think Jesus did that. He kicked. I think he threw over the tables in the church. So I always personally have a bit of a weirdness, you know, as I debate that, you know, it's like we're selling stuff, but we're a church, we're a label, but people are fans and they want to buy it, you know, for Christmas. And it's always an interesting thing. Anyways, you were asking about the merch and royalties. Absolutely. A title of a song is not a print usage. So someone could write an article or write a book about the song Goodness of God, for example. They could even title the book Goodness of God if we hadn't trademarked it. And we couldn't, you know, we couldn't pursue them for like royalties for our writers. However, as soon as you start using the lyrics of the song, so once it extends past the title and now it's the lyrics, so if this was a paragraph or a line on the hat, then yes, it would need to yield some sort of negotiated royalty, a print usage royalty to the rights owners. Absolutely. To the writers. Yeah. So when you see shirts or whatever it is with lyrics on it, it should be paying the writers. Is it always? No. Just in the same way that when you listen to a song, like are all those connections and links and matches set up correctly? Not always, which is a bummer. So
That's so interesting. I learned something today. So if your hat said, I will live in the goodness of God, it technically would pay a royalty to the writer.
Yes.
Interesting. Well, Matt, we want to respect your time today. I wonder before we wrap, if we could just pray over you. Could I just pray over you and your team before we close out?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I'll take that. Thank you.
All right. Let's do it. Lord, we thank you for this conversation today. We thank you for just the revelations and the little tidbits that we pick up. Lord, this word that Matt keeps using, stewardship, keeps popping up. And it's on my mind and heart that we are, as writers, as people working in music, people working in our churches, singing in our churches, that we're stewarding something that you've given to us. A lot of somethings, a lot of gifts and talents and spiritual gifts and things. So, Lord, we pray that you would help us steward those well. I just want to thank you for how well Bethel has stewarded those over the years, the example that they've been to us, the gifts that they've given to us just from their songs, the way they've conducted themselves, the way they've really, really poured out into others and always had a heart for just training and pouring out into others. I thank you for that. Just Matt's presence here with us today. So God, I pray that for this next season for Bethel, that as things always are changing and shifting in the world of worship, that you would continue to use those now very seasoned voices, with many of their leaders and writers and artists, with their team, with Matt and all the folks that they work together at the label and publishing, Lord, that you would, use that for your kingdom, that you would, there would be new things, new season, new songs, to come from that, that shake the church, that move your heart. And move us as people. So we ask these things, Lord, in your name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Nick. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm honored.
I hope that was as meaningful for you as it was for us. If you're a songwriter and you're resonating with any of what you heard today, we'd love to get to know you more and introduce you to some folks in our community. All of our podcast interviews and guest lectures come from either our Writing Club monthly breakouts or our annual Writing Worship Conference. Check out the show notes to learn how to get more involved with Writing Club, our mentorship taught by our founder, Chrissy Nordoff, or stuff we talked about in today's episode. Find us on Facebook at the Writing Worship Community, on Instagram at writingworship.co, and our website, writingworship.co. We love meeting new folks and supporting songwriters, so be sure to stop in, say hello, and get to know us a little bit. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
The times I've grown most as a songwriter are the times I've had mentors showing me the way. If you're looking to grow as a songwriter, we're now accepting applications for our Worship Songwriter Mentorship. Now, it's available only a few times each year. The Worship Songwriter Mentorship is a songwriting intensive that will help you craft impactful worship songs. It's a course created by Dove Award-winning and Grammy-nominated, drum roll here, please, our founder, pro songwriter Chrissy Nordoff. It's a small group community, and it's led by other songwriters over the course of 9 weeks. It's an intensive course in a small group co-writing environment, and that means you'll be added to a special group of about 12 writers, give or take. Each group is led by experienced songwriters, some of them my dear, dear friends, and I've even gotten to lead a group or two. Rachel here, by the way. We love the church, and we love to champion fellow worship songwriters just like yourself. In this mentorship, you'll learn how to write songs for you and your congregation. You'll go deeper in your intimacy with Jesus. You'll get the tools needed to help craft songs more easily and never run out of creative ideas. Okay, I know it sounds too good to be true, but trust me, this course is a game changer. You'll learn how to leverage your unique songwriting personality and connect with other like-minded writers in a meaningful way. Truly, I can't think of another course, group of people, community that has impacted my songwriting the way that this mentorship has. If you're wanting to take the next steps in your songwriting journey, then apply now at the link in our show notes. We hope to see you there.